when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Longneck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Longneck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
After three, this is ESPN 1530. I'm Mo Egger. We go to Paul Brown Stadium in just about 20 minutes. Tony Pike is there as the Bengals hold their second training camp workout. I do this every single summer. I have Robert Weintraub on the show, lifelong Bengals fan, phenomenal writer. He contributes to the Football Outsiders preseason almanac, which is available right now, along with a subscription to Football Outsiders. Normally, he writes the Bengals chapter, if you will. He did not do that this year. He did write about the Browns and the Steelers. And so, unfortunately for you, Robert, I'm going to have to make you answer questions for what Mike Tanier, who wrote the Bengals chapter, wrote, because I didn't like it. It's nice to have you, as always.
Yes, the rite of summer, our annual ritual, and this year will be painful for everyone because it was not me. Indeed, it was Mike, and I knew going in that I would have to answer for a lot of these. I did a little bit of an editing pass over his, and there was a lot of negative stuff in there about Cincy, and, the fan in me wanted to push back, of course, but then I thought it was valuable for people to know what the outside world, the kind of national picture of the Bengals really is, and I don't think Mike pulled any punches or minced any words in that sense, and it was probably good for people, particularly the Brown family, to hear what people think about the franchise. So if you want to get into it, I'm here for you. There's certainly some optimism in there as well, but we can talk about the team and the entire division at your leisure.
Well, I I'm lazy, so I could have looked this up. You might not have this at your disposal, but you, the Football Outsiders projection model gives them effectively a 27% chance of making the postseason, which that seems to me to be pretty optimistic for a team coming off a four-win year last year. Do you know in recent years if the probability for the Bengals to make the postseason has ever been that high?
It's been right around that. It was right around that in 2016, coming off their long mini dynasty there of the early 2010s. And it's been, in that range, kind of ranging between 22 and 28%, depending on what you consider making the playoffs is. We have it at playoff contention starts at 7 wins and goes to, obviously, 11 wins, and then Super Bowl contender is 12 or more wins. So, if you want to break it down, the Bengals are, by our numbers, and we played the season out 1 million times in a projection system, and then, plug in the numbers. And when we do that, the Bengals win between 6 and 8 games 41% of the time.
Right.
And they're 9 to 11 wins is roughly the same as their 0 to 5 range. So, when you say it's a 27% chance of making the playoffs, and yeah, that sounds pretty good. Unfortunately, they have about the same amount of chance of being in contention for the first overall pick in the draft again. So, it's a volume of numbers, and the overall volume says that the Bengals most likely this year will be kind of mediocre, more in the 6-8, 6-9, 6-10 win range. And, of course, remember, there's a 17th game this year, which throws everybody's thinking off. The optimistic fan, and certainly we can number ourselves that, especially that time of year, we'll look at it and say, they should be in wild card contention, and the numbers bear that out. On the other hand, you could look at it the very same numbers and say, if injuries happen, not just to Joe Burrow, but just to any, cluster position group or anything like that, that usually happens around the NFL level, they could easily wind up being out of the race by October again. So it all depends on how you look at it, and also taking the sort of overall big picture projection system kind of as a range rather than, making exact predictions.
The gentleman, I've had Mike on this show before. Mike Tanier was not a fan of the Bengals taking Ja'Marr Chase instead of Penei Sewell, and you were a part of the nationwide conversation about Team Sewell versus Team Chase. I'm very willing to admit I was Team Chase then. I'm Team Chase now. Do you share the opinion that Mike has in the piece that not only should the Bengals have taken Penei Sewell, but that bypassing him was a colossal mistake?
I didn't want to use the word colossal, but I was Team Sewell. Let's put it that way. It's less about the individual players, and I think Mike alluded to that, and we've talked about this, and obviously the conversation before the draft touched on all this, is that Chase in a vacuum is a great player, and he's great to have on your team. For me, it was always more about sort of your team concept and the construction of your team. What happens when, you know, you have frontline guys, like last year when the Joe Mixon got hurt and the C.J. Uzomah got hurt. God forbid Joe Burrow gets hurt, everything goes down the toilet. But even if it's just other skill players get hurt, what happens then? Well, if your offensive line is good, you're still going to be at least competitive. And if you can bully other teams, which is something the Bengals so seldom do, and I really want them to do, it's a very personal thing, I have to say. But, you know, if the Bengals, when they were at their best in the years that we've talked about, the glory years of 1988 and 2005 and even 2015, you know, they bullied other teams up front. That, to me, is where you want to get back to. Was Penei Sewell the guy to do that? Maybe, maybe not. You have that discussion. You look at the tape and you decide whether or not he is the guy up there. But I think the overall point is what you want to do is do as much as you can to get that offensive line, not just decent, but the powerful strength of your team. And then if you can do that, everything else kind of flows from there. And you don't have to draft a player quite the quality of Ja'Marr Chase in that top five slot. You can have a good receiver, you know, like they did last year, where T. Higgins explodes out of the second round, or Tyler Boyd. And as great as Ja'Marr Chase is and proves to be, you know, he's going to be out there on an island, whereas, as we all know, the game starts up front. And to me, it was worth, you know, turning their every attention they possibly could to improving that line. Now, they could be good enough, and hopefully they will be good enough. And I think what Mike's point was is that they've kind of said maybe, the Bengals have said maybe and if, and we can be good enough for several years now and it hasn't worked. Maybe the time now is to go all out and go in the other direction. So a little urgency, which they haven't done in years past.
My counter to that, at least in the run-up to the draft, is, and look, had they taken Penei Sewell, fine, right? I mean, you can't blame a team who had a bad offensive line for taking the guy that many believe was the best offensive lineman in the draft. That would have been fine. No issue with that. My counter to it was, and this is maybe not as scientific as anything you can present, but I watched that 2015 team did have an outstanding offensive line, but they also had a lot of guys who were really good at getting open. They had a great red zone threat that year, the one good year Tyler Eifert had, A.J. Green at his peak, Sanu and Jones, very good complementary receivers. Giovanni Bernard had a 1,200-yard from scrimmage season that year. So they had all these weapons. And then so since then, yes, the offensive line starts to decline. They let Andrew Whitworth get away. They let Kevin Zeitler get away. The Cedric Oboihe doesn't work out. Jake Fisher doesn't work out. Billy Price hasn't worked out. And so the offensive line hasn't been very good. At the same time, there was also a drop-off in the quality that the Bengals did have at the skill spots because Sanu goes away, Jones goes away, A.J. gets old, Eifert's always hurt. And so, yeah, I mean, look, did Andy get hit more? Did the offense fall apart in part because the offensive line wasn't very good? Of course. But also, that team in 15 took advantage of Andy's strength, which was get rid of the football quickly because somebody was always open. And I see with a better quarterback in Joe Burrow, giving him another weapon who's good at getting open, that can mitigate some of your shortcomings on the offensive line, which wasn't within the Bengals' capabilities in the years subsequent to 2015.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And, you know, you can certainly make that case, and it's true. And, again, one player, you know, it's a team game. I mean, it's a cliche, but listen, if there was just the matter of fixing one position or one spot, obviously every team would have done that, you know, and the Bengals would have done it a long time ago. It's more of a, like I said, a team-building concept. But what we go back to 2015, and what you were saying is all true, but, you know, all the guys you mentioned, all those skilled players basically were healthy all year. And, you know, to me, it's what happens when it's not, because more often they're not than they are, right? And you have to kind of go with plan B and plan C and plan D. And the really consistent good teams, like that team that wears black and gold and others that we cannot mention, always seem to have a way to build their team that stuff doesn't go away when, you know, the quote-unquote stars go down. They still are competitive. They don't just cave in immediately once, you know, Joe Mixon gets hurt or, you know, pick your wide receiver, Tyler Eifert gets hurt. You know, and that to me is core strength on the offensive line and the defensive front seven, pass rush specifically. And those are two areas the Bengals have really struggled the last half decade for sure. And you know, that to me was why it made more sense to go after at least, if not Sewell in particular, then at least address it more strongly in free agency than they did. And then you can, you know, you could have talked me into going with Chase as long as they then, you know, got an equivalent player in the second round. And listen, Jackson Carman might wind up being, you know, Joe Tooney at a guard position. So who knows? You know, we're all just sort of projecting here, and things go way off of predictions all the time in the NFL. To me, again, it's just more about the team building concept and what, how you prefer to do it. And the way the Bengals have done it over the last 5 years obviously hasn't worked. That's really the main issue. Maybe it's time to try something new.
Let's talk about him on defense. And Mike makes reference to something that I've kind of talked about a little bit here during the offseason, that there's going to be a lot of fans who, you know, tune into a Bengals game this year, maybe haven't paid attention this offseason, and go, oh, that's where that guy ended up. Or, oh, yeah, that dude's still in the league. Or that guy's with the Bengals, right? There's a lot of those guys on this team's defense. You could tell me that this unit's going to be okay. You can't convince me they're going to be very good. You can convince me that if they're okay, this team can take off, because I do think they're going to score points. You could also tell me that this defense is going to stink, and that's plausible. When you look at this unit metrically, when you try to project ahead, what is the floor and what is the ceiling for this defense?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, one stat that blew me away was that the Bengals actually last year in the first quarter of games were a top five defense, fourth overall by our metrics, the way we chart games. Yeah, that's obviously pretty good. The problem was the last three quarters they were 31st in the league. Now, what's the problem there? You know, it's not one thing. You can blame Luana Rumo's adjustment ability. You can blame stamina or whatever. But to me, it was mostly about depth, right? And then, you know, the Bengals were hit by injuries a lot last year. They were playing guys off the street at defensive tackle and at cornerbacks, and at key moments, he looked out there and he didn't recognize hardly anybody on the team. That was a problem, and I think that's what they tried to address this year defensively, was not even so much, you know, getting the talent level boosted by a great amount. It was more about just getting enough bodies who are capable so that when you are hit by injuries and you are down to your fourth and fifth defensive back, it's a guy who's still capable, and it's not a guy just off the street trying to figure out, you know, the other guy's names in the huddle. In that sense, I think they did improve. I think they certainly addressed the secondary when that comes to that. They brought in a lot of guys where the depth will be much better, and I think we'll see that along the defensive line as well. The problem with me is still that pass rush is questionable at best. You know, I think we mentioned that when you have a Hendrickson and you have Sam Hubbard, that's good if you have two other guys that they're in rotations with, you know, and but the problem is we don't really have anybody to rotate them with. At least nobody obvious who's going to come in right away and produce like, say, Carl Lawson did. So, listen, I'm certainly assuming that if the Bengals do have success this year, it's going to be mainly because their offense outscores other teams, and it's not because they're winning games 19-16, right? And that's certainly what they have planned to do as well. I do think there's a possibility they can improve. And last year they were, you know, they were actually really good on third down. Their third down defense was, you know, much higher than average. It was really on second down where they fell apart. And they were good in the middle of the field, top five in the middle of the field, but really bad along the perimeter. So it's almost, again, it's another cliche, but it's situational football. It's not a case where the Bengals are just, oh, they're hard defensively, or they can't play, you know, linebackers all stink, whatever. It's situations, and it's key situations, and it's, you know, the short and small areas of games that wind up turning against you. Listen, the Bengals blow a lot of league weight. They're in a lot of games, and they can't find ways to win them. And the key is making those plays late in the game or in key situations. You know, when you have the team backed up or whatever, you know, you make the call on what the situation is, but they have to find ways to make those into winning plays. And, you know, no amount of metrics can really chart that for sure. We can just say, here's where they fell short, here's where they need to improve. I think they know that too, and they tried to address it. Whether it happens, you know, on the field remains to be seen.
The Football Outsiders Almanac 2021, Football Outsiders Almanac 2021 is available now. Easy for me to say. Go to footballoutsiders.com. Robert Weintraub is with us. You did write the capsules for the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I tend to think the Steelers might be terrible. I tend to think that the Cleveland Browns are going to be good, but are undeserving of a lot of the national and even local hype they're getting.
And we agree with you in part, certainly with the Browns. And I've written, you know, about the Browns quite a bit over the years for this publication. And almost always it's the same principle. It's like, yeah, slow down on that dream there, big fella. Don't buy the Super Bowl tickets just yet. And in this case, the hype is even bigger than it's been in recent years, and, you know, deservedly so, obviously. They made the playoffs last year. They beat the Steelers. They were in the Chiefs game. You know, they had a nice run. Problem is, A, our projection systems count the last 3 years, and it's, you know, it's not just what you do in the last 5 weeks of last season. So it's much more of a thorough accounting. And we have the Browns, you know, about equal with Pittsburgh, basically. They both have about a 72% chance of winning between 6 and 11 games. That's where their floor is. That's where their ceiling is. The, you know, fine print will decide there, and obviously 11 wins looks a lot different than 6 wins. The case of the Browns is, they had incredibly good health on their offensive line last year at 74 out of a possible 80 games started. And they had a great turnover per drive number, forcing turnovers. And that usually, both of those numbers usually don't correlate from year to year. They usually bounce back to the middle. And those are two key elements, especially with the Browns, when you think they've had bad defenses the last couple of years, and they replaced, what, 9 out of 11 starters, it looks like. I mean, they could really have a talk about new faces. So, you know, it's going to be a learning curve for those guys, too, and a tricky schedule and a good division. You know, the idea that the Browns are suddenly going to win 13 games and go to the Super Bowl, I have a hard time believing that. Conversely, with the Steelers, it's a similar case, just in reverse. It's like you look at them from the outside and you think, ugh, Roethlisberger looked so terrible last year. They couldn't run the ball at all. They dropped passes all over the field. How are they going to even win 6 games? But again, the projection system looks at the bigger picture and looks at them over the past several years. And, you know, we know more than anyone, you start wish-casting for the Steelers to be bad, and they bounce it right back on you, and they face-plant you into the turf. They still have the bet. They have the number one defense in the entire league, by our numbers projected to be. I mean, they're on a 73-game sack streak. You know, they get Devin Bush back. They're still going to be very good defensively. They are very shallow in a couple of key areas, linebacker, cornerback. And if the injury bug hits them, that could be a problem. And, of course, you know, their offensive line isn't great either. And it really all depends on who's the real Ben Roethlisberger. Is he ever going to regain 2018, 2019 form? Or is he the old man we saw stuck on the bench with his hands in his pockets looking miserable at the end of last year? We all want that to be the case, and hopefully that is the case. And if he stinks, yeah, the Steelers are going nowhere. But, you know, again, hoping for that to be the case with the Steelers is always tricky territory. So we have them pretty much in the same grouping as the Browns. And, you know, it'll depend on a handful of games here and there, probably a handful of plays, which one gets to 10 wins and which one gets to 7 wins, and, you know, which one thinks they have a terrible season and which one thinks they had a good season. And really the difference between the two is pretty negligible.
Robert Weintraub contributes to the Football Outsiders 2021 Almanac. It's available now, footballoutsiders.com. There's also, and I think this is an addition starting last year, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, there's very comprehensive college football coverage, which, by the way, whoever picked UC as 20th, I'm not going to have them on too. I'm not going to make you answer to them. But, I mean,
that was not me.
That struck me as a little low, nonetheless. In addition to all that, Robert is a wonderful author. Your most recent book, The Divine Miss Marble, goes paperback next month, correct?
That's correct, yeah, next week even. I believe it's next Tuesday. So thank you for the Mo mention there. Always something that has helped for us book sales. And you can get it on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, anywhere books are sold. Fascinating story of a great female tennis player who was then recruited and served as an espionage agent during World War II, with a lot of maybes and what happened to her incredible life story in there, a lot of detective work. So, fascinating story. I was really glad to be able to tell it. And, yes, you can get it in paperback starting next week.
All right, and follow Rob on Twitter, at Rob Wein, W-E-I-N. I hope to do it during the season, man. Thank you, as always.
Anytime, Mo. You know that. Thanks, man. Appreciate
it. Football Outsiders Annual Almanac available now, footballoutsiders.com. We are way late. We will go to Paul Brown Stadium. Tony Pike from training camp joins us next.
This baseball season, catch every game at Long Neck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings, and there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Long Neck's. Long Neck Sports Grill. And by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Long Neck's patio. Long Neck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.